today on Vox Talks Economics, early evidence on the effect of exposure to AI on our jobs.
Okay, so welcome everybody for this new panel of economic policy. Thanks very much for people that are either here or online.
Welcome to the first of two special episodes of Vox Talks, coming to you from the Spring 2024 Economic Policy Panel meeting at the National Bank of Belgium. All the papers at the meeting are focusing on AI and the economy, and in our first report, I'm going to focus on two papers that are using the limited amount of empirical data so far to estimate the impact of AI on the labour market. When we try to decide whether AI will, on balance, create jobs or destroy them, there are two interpretations of its impact. Gino Gancia of the University of Milan Bicocca describes a point of view that argues technology tends to create employment while raising our living standards.
Typically, new technologies and AI in this case can increase the productivity of workers, can make workers more productive. For instance, it may help doctors in analyzing medical exams. It can also improve decision making, and this can make firms more productive, and then more productive firms tend to hire more workers. So this is called in the literature the productivity effect, and it tends to help everybody.
But there is also a more pessimistic view, let's call it the robots are coming view, that soon the AIs will replace many of our jobs. And in that case, we need to find out as quickly as possible which jobs are going to be replaced, how quickly, and how the people who will lose their jobs will cope. Juan Jimeno of Banco de España explains.
There is a lot of anxiety and a lot of uncertainty. While the history of technological progress had been a history of automation of routine tasks and machines that complement workers and make them more productive, now some people fear that what we are witnessing is a new type of technological progress that could automate all the tasks that we perform at the jobs, everything that we can do. Then the problem is where are the jobs that people are going to take when adjusting to the implementation of artificial intelligence. And this is the source of the anxiety. The source of the anxiety is that there will be no new jobs, new tasks for people to perform once that artificial intelligence is fully developed and can implement many of the tasks that we now do.
Gino and Juan both presented papers at the Economic Policy Panel meeting that used empirical evidence to estimate the impact of AI on employment. First of all, I spoke to Gino about his research that uses evidence from the US of how AI has automated aspects of our jobs, going back to the year 2000, as well before ChatGPT came on the scene, and that's where our conversation began. What I asked him in the first decade of the 21st century qualified as AI in the workplace.
So to answer this question, we need a definition of AI, and we take a broad working definition of AI as algorithm applied to big data. And as such, early applications of AI could be search engines, personalized ads and suggestions. And even nowadays, you could think of ChatGPT as a very sophisticated search engine. And you should also keep in mind that major companies that are involved in big data collection were founded around the early 2000s, Amazon, Google, Facebook, and so on. It is also true, however, that our data suggests that AI adoption accelerated after 2010.
There's no easy proxy to measure the adoption of AI, though, is there? Firms don't list their spending on AI separately in their accounts. How do you measure AI adoption over time?
This is one of the key challenges in the literature. And to make progress, we recognize that in order to adopt AI, you need workers with very specific skills, and in particular, workers that can use very specific software, which is used for machine learning and data analysis. So what we do is to identify those occupations that possess those skills, and then we measure AI adoption as the increase in employment in those occupations, the AI-related occupations.
Now, to map this to employment in commuting zones in the US to show the employment effect of the adoption of AI. Is it as simple as looking where there's the AI adoption and looking at employment trends there, and then you get a causal effect?
No, you just get a correlation. Yeah. And looking at correlations is interesting, but suppose that you find a positive correlation between AI and employment. It could be that AI adoption increases employment, but it could also be that a booming economy is a good time to invest in AI. And this may create a spurious correlation between AI adoption and employment. The problem is that there might be contemporaneous shocks that affect simultaneously both employment and AI adoption. So to identify causal effects, we need to build a measure of exogenous exposure to AI, which is uncorrelated to other shocks. And we do that building on two premises. The first one is that industries differ in the potential for AI adoption for technological reasons. And we measure this with the increase in AI-related employment at the industry level for the aggregate economy in the US. And the second premise is that commuting zones differ in their pattern of specialization across industries for historical reasons. And then we identify commuting zones that are more exposed to AI as those that are specialized in industries that experience stronger AI employment growth. This measure of exogenous exposure to AI is a strong predictor of the actual AI adoption at the commuting zone level, and then we use it to identify the causal effects.
But even with all the care you're taking, 20-year horizon for technology adoption, it's quite a long time frame. Is it possible ever to isolate the impact of AI adoption on jobs when there have been so many other things going on?
Yes, there are so many other things, but our approach compares commuting zones that are similar in many dimensions, and we control for a number of potential shocks, contemporaneous shocks that have been studied in the literature. So we have different ways for controlling for business cycle and economic shocks. We control also for all other shocks that have been shown in the literature to have a significant effect on employment, like import competition from China that took place around the same years, the adoption of industrial robots, ICT, which of course is related to AI, but it's different. We control for that as well. Capital deepening, offshoring. So of course, there is always the possibility that there is something else which is affecting the result, but our results are pretty robust and we control for all the usual suspects.
Some of the early work on AI and its impact compared its employment effect is broadly similar to the effect of industrial robots on employment. From your work, is that a valid comparison?
Well, it depends. To some extent, yes, in the sense that we find evidence suggesting that AI displaces workers precisely as industrial robots. But there are also some important differences. Industrial robots are concentrated in very few sectors within manufacturing, and typically they tend to affect those sectors only. AI adoption is more prevalent in the service industries, and it tends to affect the whole economy. So there are some similarities, but the potential for AI to affect the economy and employment is much greater because in advanced countries, manufacturing is now a small share of GDP and employment.
In aggregate, then, what do you find is the causal effect of AI adoption on employment?
It's not easy to answer this question, but I can give you some numbers. And in particular, compared to the average commuting zone with the average level of adoption that we observe, an hypothetical commuting zone with no adoption of AI at all would experience faster employment growth by 0.6 percentage points over the sample period of 20 years, which is not a trivial amount.
And one notable thing about the adoption of AI has been that many high-paid knowledge workers, we call them now, are afraid because they fear their replacement by AI. From your evidence, are their fears justified?
So it's a concern, and we study the effect of AI adoption on employment across the wage distribution. And we find that this negative effect is uniform until we get to the top 10% of earners. For them, it becomes strongly positive.
Yeah.
So this means that, yes, there are some winners, and the winners are, as you may have expected...
people who are winning already.
Exactly,
yes.
Exactly. But it also means that there are many good jobs that are at risk.
If there are winners, there are also losers who should be concerned about the impact of AI on their jobs.
So we find that the negative effect is particularly strong for low-skilled workers, meaning workers without a college degree, for middle-aged workers, and for production workers.
How would you describe the impact of AI on employment and on inequality, something that we're very worried about at the moment?
So given our results, and also the fact that these results seem to be heterogeneous across workers, results tend to support the view that AI has contributed to the automation of jobs, and so it is displacing workers in some occupations, and probably it has contributed also to the increase in inequality, given these differential effects and the positive effect for the top earners. We do not look specifically at wages, but it would be interesting to look at that as well. But given these results, our prior is that most likely automation through AI has contributed to increasing inequality.
In June 2023, we spoke to Daron Acemoglu about his belief that unchecked techno-optimism around innovations like AI is concentrating power in the hands of a super wealthy elite and undermining democracy. Follow Vox Talk so you can listen to this archive episode called Power and Progress.
Juan's paper starts with broadly the same questions. Which workers have been most exposed to the impact of AI? And using that information, it investigates what difference that has made to the composition of the labour market.
We borrow the measure of exposure to artificial intelligence from other people's work. Then you think that jobs that are doing this task are in danger. And there you can construct the exposure indicator. This is the first step, because the second step is whether exposure is for good or for bad, because exposure could be a source of complementarity, and then it means that your productivity increases, or could be displacement, and then you lose your job. And this is where the progress is still a bit lacking. So we need more research into how to measure complementarities, because a job is a combination of tasks. And even if some tasks could be automated, people perform many tasks in their jobs. So to what extent the exposure to artificial intelligence depends on the combination of tasks that you do at your work is also an important issue. And this is where we probably need more progress, how to measure these things.
Given the measure of exposure that you have, how do you then apply this to find out something about employment and wages?
Well, there is two ways that you can do this. One is looking at the aggregate effect of employment and wages and see what happens to aggregate employment and aggregate wages. This is what, for instance, Gino Gansia is doing in his paper, and this is what many other people are doing, mostly for the US. The approach that we take in our paper is not to look for aggregate effects, it's look for changes in the composition of employment and for changes in relative wages, because these changes will tell you something about complementarities. If artificial intelligence is complementarity to occupations, you will see those occupations more complementary, more exposed, gaining employment share and gaining relative wages. And that's why we look at the composition of employment and relative wages. And what we find is that patients more exposed to artificial intelligence-enabled automation gain employment share during the period that we look at, which is 2011-2019. And this is true for most European countries. In our paper, we have data for 16 European countries, and in most of them, there is this positive association.
Why did you choose to do it in Europe rather than the US, where most of this research comes from?
Well, there are two reasons for that. One is that we are in Europe, and it's part of our job to look at European countries. The second reason, more important, I think, is that the impact of artificial intelligence is not independent on the institutional characteristics of the countries. You might think that in more flexible labor market, like in the US, the impact could be sooner and greater because labor demand and labor supply adjust more quickly. In Europe, we have labor market institutions and product market competition and development of digital infrastructure, which is quite different to the US. So probably the effect could be different. So we cannot compare to the US, but looking at cross-country comparison, you can see how differences in institutions across countries can affect the impact of artificial intelligence on the labor market.
What does that cross-country comparison tell us about the differences between countries in Europe?
Those countries with a better digital infrastructure and with a more open artificial intelligence environment, the positive association between exposure to artificial intelligence and gains and in employment shares is higher. So for the complementarities between artificial intelligence and occupations, having a good digital infrastructure is a good thing. On the contrary, if you look at labor market institutions, what you find is that more rigid labor market, where competition in the product market is also lower, there the employment gains are lower also. So there is a negative association between rigidity of labor and product markets and the complementarity impact of artificial intelligence on occupation. And finally, also countries with more human capital measured by, you know, the share of tertiary education or measured by years of schooling. In those countries, also the complementarity is higher. So one way of interpreting these results is that there are complementarities, and so far the complementarities are more important than the displacement effects of artificial intelligence.
You're using the word association. Is it too much to say that AI is causing these changes?
Yeah, it's too much. Are not attempting to measure causal effects. But you see, if the descriptive evidence tells you that there is no smoke, then you shouldn't care about the cause of the fire, right? And so far, what we find is that this anxiety about the disruptive effects of artificial intelligence is probably an exaggeration. The one-line interpretation of our results is that what we are seeing so far is basically the type of skill bias technological progress that we saw during the 80s and 90s.
This appears to be a more encouraging interpretation of the impact of AI than we have seen in other similar work. It seems, from your interpretation, to be broadly similar to what we saw in the 80s and the 90s.
That's the way we are reading our results, which is still preliminary because we are looking at the early stages, not the period between 2011 and 2019. And most concerns are due to the new generation of artificial intelligence, generative artificial intelligence, large language models, and the possibility that these technologies could provide a general purpose technology able to substitute everybody in the distribution of occupations. So we cannot say that our results are going to remain there for the new generation of artificial intelligence. Any ideas about how generative artificial intelligence will impact the labor market will be a speculation because we don't have hard data so far to measure these things. What we can say is that if artificial intelligence, the new generation, is implemented in the same way with the same characteristics that the artificial intelligence have at the initial phases, then it will be more like a skill-biased technological progress than a technological revolution of robots taking power.
So can these two sets of results, Gino's aggregate estimates for US employment, showing a negative impact, and Juan's research into the composition of the labor market in Europe, be reconciled?
I view the two papers as complementary. They use a very different approach. They study the employment evolution of occupations that are identified as exposed to automation. And typically, they don't find strong negative effects for those occupations, which may seem different, of course, from what we find. But I think this can be explained by the fact that typically those measures of exposure to AI are agnostic on whether exposed occupations are complementary or substitute with AI. And I think it's this type of heterogeneity that is masking the aggregate effect.
We really have nothing to say about the aggregate effects on employment. Our results are more in concordance than contradictory, because what they find is that the local market effects on aggregate employment are negative. When you introduce artificial intelligence, what we find in our paper is that regardless of what happened to aggregate employment, high-skilled workers experience an increase in employment share. When we look at different samples depending on the age and skills of the workers, we find that the complementarity seem to be larger for young and high-skilled workers, which is precisely what they are finding.
Well, what these two analyses certainly have in common is that the most likely workers to suffer are those that have the least education. So I asked both Gino and Juan to sum up, what can policy do to help?
I think it's important to recognize that policy can intervene. And our results suggest that some useful policy intervention could be aimed at helping workers to transition, retrain, and acquire skills that are needed in the new world. Specifically, we do have evidence for college-educated workers, and our evidence suggests that promoting investment in education is certainly good, but we find that specifically it's only the occupations that require a STEM degree that really benefit from these technologies. So not only investing in education, but also targeting the right type of skill can be important. And then if indeed the effects of AI are so asymmetric and heterogeneous, and if they help those who are already winning, then transfers from the winners to the losers could be a way to make sure that the benefits are shared more fairly. And then finally, there is evidence that in many instances, AI can complement workers. So also try to promote the development of AI applications that are complementary to workers can be very important for the future. So I'm an optimist. I think we have good reasons to think that better technologies can do wonder to us, to the society. But to get there, we also need the right regulations, especially to make sure that the benefits are shared. I think it's important that policymakers intervene to make sure that these new technologies are used to make us more productive and not just focused on cost saving.
Yeah, always the same policy advocated by economists is education, investment in human capital. This is worrying because when you look at the data from education system across Europe, during the period that we analyze in our paper, you don't see an increase in the supply of university graduates with STEM specialization. It's a general phenomenon. There are very few countries where there are some slight increases. So if you believe that there is a complementarity, probably we should invest more in this kind of human capital and provide better, more education for these fields.
These two papers are Artificial Intelligence and Jobs, Evidence from US Commuting Zones, and the authors are Alessandra Bonfilioli, Rosario Crino, Gino Gancia, and Ioannis Papadakis, and New Technologies and Jobs in Europe. And the authors are Stefania Albanesi, Antonio Diaz da Silva, Juan Jimeno, Anna Lamo, and Elena Wabich. They are both available now, and they will both be published in this next issue of Economic Policy.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. If you want to hear more about the latest and most interesting research in economics, then subscribe. You will find us wherever you get your podcasts. Next week on Vox Talks Economics, how should we regulate the development of AI?